everyone. My name is Maria Thomas, and I work for Allianz Research, the global team of economists, strategists, sector advisors, and foresight experts of the Allianz Group, led by Ludovic Subron. Welcome to Tomorrow, a podcast where we'll be talking about our latest analyses of economic and capital market developments, as well as our views on trends affecting risk management. Let's get started. As China's parliamentary meetings come to an end, what's the outlook for the economy in 2024 and beyond? In this episode, we speak to senior economist Françoise Huang about whether the new three industries of electric vehicles, batteries, and solar energy products could become China's new drivers of growth. Hello, Françoise. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Maria. Thank you for having me.
So we're recording this episode on the last day of China's two sessions. Can you tell us what some of the big takeaways are?
Yes, absolutely. So these are annual parliamentary meetings that China has every March. Of course, in 2020, it was not in March, but yeah, usually it's in the beginning of March every year, where Chinese authorities reveal the policy priorities and the economic targets for the year. So usually there are not a lot of big surprises. For example, we were expecting that the GDP growth target would be set at around 5%, the same as last year. It might be more difficult to achieve this target this year because we don't have the post-COVID rebound and there are still some structural weights on growth that we might be talking about later on that could act against this target. But yeah, it was not a surprise that the official target would be set there. And to achieve this target, also authorities discussed and made public some plans when it comes to the fiscal policy in particular, how much government bonds will be issued to facilitate government spending, government investment, for example, in infrastructure. What maybe surprised me a little bit and was a slight positive surprise was that authorities committed to issue for the coming few years ultra-long central government special bonds, which they had done previously only in 2020, 2007, and the late 90s. So this used to be a tool used really for crisis management. And now they have decided to use that tool again to provide room for further policy support and to, let's say, cushion the downwards trend in the Chinese economic growth. So let's say the two sessions, they mostly were in line with expectations in terms of how much growth we're going to expect this year. But yeah, this maybe was a small positive surprise for me on how much policy support will be coming this year.
So you wrote in your report that some of China's old drivers of growth are losing steam, right?
Yeah, indeed. So I mentioned right before that there are some downwards pressure, some structural pressures. And of course, I think our listeners for sure will have followed that the Chinese real estate sector is not in a great shape. It's true that since 2000, since mid-2021, actually to be really precise, the real estate sector has gone from hero to zero. In the past, it was really a growth driver. It was used in a contra-cyclical way by authorities, meaning that the real estate would fare better as a support for overall activity when the rest of the economy was not faring as well. However, since 2020, tighter policy measures were put in place to rein in the long-term risks presented by the real estate sector, especially over inventories, excess leverage. So policymakers really wanted to tackle these long-term risks in an environment where, of course, the demographics and the urbanization trends were not as supportive for the real estate sector as they used to be. So as a result, of course, we've seen in the news the default of large real estate developers in the past few years. But in terms of activity, for example, we estimate that the real estate development has been more than 25% lower than its pre-pandemic trend. So it was clearly the underperformer in the past few years. So in a sense, this might be a necessary adjustment. The sector does need to go from the previous equilibrium of high pace of growth to a new normal of low growth. But this, of course, will create difficulties for the Chinese economy overall, because this sector used to account for around 25-30% of overall Chinese activity. So this definitely is, as you said, right, one of these old drivers of growth that is losing steam. We can also talk about foreign investment. In the past, so ever since the Chinese economy opened to the rest of the world, ever since China joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, in 2001, foreign investors have been interested in the Chinese market, both, of course, for the large size of its domestic demand, but also for the competitive cost of labor and the competitive environment for the manufacturing sector. So this might be changing going forward, and this is also an important piece of news that hit the world last year, which is that for the first time in decades, foreign direct investment into China turned negative. So I would say that there are two dimensions to that data that surprised, I think, all Chinese observers. On the one hand, there are maybe some short-term drivers, because also for the first time in decades, actually, the yield returns in China turned lower than in the US, because the monetary policy cycles were very different. So foreign investors were more interested in bringing their receipts back into the home country, for example, the US, rather than keeping them in China, meaning that so we did have capital going out of China. But so this is a short-term factor that led to these capital outflows. But on the other hand, there are also definitely long-term factors at play. The tenser geopolitical environment, all this trend of diversification of supply chains means that companies, foreign companies, now maybe are thinking about reducing or maybe in some cases halting the new investments they were planning to do in China. That's the case, for example, when we look at some surveys. The American Chamber of Commerce in China's business climate survey last year, 45% of the respondents found that the investment environment in China was deteriorating, up from 16% on average between 2018 and 2021. So for sure, this is also a growth driver that is losing steam. I would say that foreign investors are not leaving China, but they are thinking twice now before adding more investment, and they are looking at other destinations to set up new manufacturing facilities. So that's another factor that should weigh on Chinese growth going forward. And then lastly, I will come to exports, because of course, this is also a growth driver for the Chinese economy, for the Chinese manufacturing sector. And there, I would say that saying that Chinese exports are losing steam, I think it's right and wrong at the same time. Because if you look at the overall figure in the past few months, yes, for sure, exports have not been performing as well as in the previous decades, or not even as well as during the early stages of the pandemic. But there is some cyclical factor at play, because global demand was softening. There are some structural factors at play, what we mentioned before, the diversification of global supply chains, foreign investors and foreign companies maybe looking for suppliers elsewhere than in China. But at the same time, our analysis shows that China will remain the world's critical supplier in the short to medium term. So I let our listeners go refer to the report to look into what our methodology is. But basically, we looked at for what share of global trade, for what share of US imports, what share of EU imports, China is a critical supplier. China is a supplier that really cannot be replaced in the short term. And I think here I would raise two interesting conclusions that we found. First of all, is that when it comes to US imports from China, nearly 50% of those are actually critical dependencies. So it means that when we look at US imports from China, nearly half of those, the US will struggle a lot to find a substitute to China in the coming years. And secondly, when we look at the sectoral breakdown of these critical dependencies, it's clear that China has moved up in the global value chain. So maybe in the early 2000s, the critical dependencies were more in the textiles industries. But in the recent years, the critical dependencies are now more found in higher value added sectors, such as electronics or household equipment.
Okay, so how is the strategy shifting now? What is the government doing in response?
Yeah, so coming back to this this last idea I described, the moving up the value chain, I think that's really the strategy. It's a focus on the supply side. It's a focus on the industry. It's a focus on what China is able to manufacture. So there's this big focus of upgrading the manufacturing base and going towards higher value added products. And it's already in part visible, as I described, with the critical dependencies. It's a result of a long-term plan of, let's say, playing the innovation game. Chinese authorities have put in place the means and the funding and the policy priorities to develop the innovation environment in China. And we do see the results also there. So there's this ranking developed by the World Intellectual Property Organization that now ranks China as the 12th most innovative nation, up, for example, from 29th, almost 10 years ago in 2015. So this is, I would say, the big focus that authorities have, moving up the value chain, developing innovation potential. And in our report, we focus more closely on the new three industries. So new three, because that's actually how Chinese authorities call them. The new three industries of electric vehicles, batteries, and solar energy products. Of course, they pick these new three because it's where actually Chinese manufacturers and Chinese exporters are performing well. For example, the latest data show that China commands nearly 56% of the global electrical vehicle battery market. Chinese electric vehicle sales, so domestically, for the first time, Chinese brands overtook more than half of the Chinese sales of vehicles, in part thanks to this drive of electric vehicles. So they overtook foreign brands for the first time since we have data. There are many more statistics that show that China has clearly found a dominant position in these sectors. For example, China also became the largest exporter of passenger cars, overtaking Japan, in part, again, thanks to this global drive of switching from thermal to electric vehicles. So the strategy from the government is to shift towards higher value added industries by supporting innovation, by supporting activity in these higher value added, higher technology industries. And in the cases of So far, in the cases of electric vehicle, battery, and solar energy products, it seems to be paying off. It seems to be successful. But we would caution that going forward, it may be difficult to replicate such success to other sectors. It may be even difficult to extend further the success in these sectors because there are headwinds that are gathering externally. We have protectionism. The geopolitical tensions are rising. The foreign markets, even including Europe, the US, of course, might turn more skeptical against Chinese products, and some barriers to further trade could be put in place. At least it's under discussion. And domestically, of course, there's the usual issues of excess capacities, excess inventories, excess leverage. Some of these issues that I mentioned, for example, for the real estate, the old driver of growth, these are definitely also factors and challenges that Chinese policymakers will have to think about when they put their focus and support to the new industries and new drivers of growth.
And so do you expect this strategy to work? What's your outlook for the economy going forward?
I think that the emergence of these new industries, emergence of new technologies, new higher value-added sectors, these are unlikely to make up for the loss, let's say, or the drag on growth that the old drivers, mainly the real estate sector, is doing on growth. So overall, for the coming years in China, we do see a trend of lower growth. And most importantly, our latest long-term GDP growth forecasts see a long-term downwards trend of growth that is lower than what we had before. So, for example, for on average between 2025 and 2029, now we expect the Chinese economy to grow by 3.9%. This compares with the same forecast being at 5% before the COVID-19 pandemic broke, or 4.5% before the ongoing real estate crisis unfolded. So in any case, we even before the challenges that Chinese policymakers and the Chinese economy are currently facing, we were expecting a downwards trend in the long-term growth. But now the path seems to be even lower than what we had before. So let's say that the new strategy, it works to some extent in the sense that it helps to cushion against an even steeper decline in growth. It helps to provide alternatives to the old drivers of growth. It helps to avoid a Japanification of the Chinese economy. But of course, they will not fully make up for the old drivers of growth. And in this podcast and in our report, actually, we focused on what the Chinese authorities are trying to do and in the industrial space, what they're trying to do on the supply side. But we think that also more needs to be done on the demand side. So more public policies should be put in place to support consumers, private consumers. More policies should be put in place to help them unlock the high level of savings that Chinese households have. They have such a high level of savings because, generally speaking, the social safety net is not inclusive enough or not supportive enough. They're also saving that much because the down payment needed for buying a flat is high in most cases in most cities in China. So there's a whole system that needs some reforms, so that needs some new policy support to help Chinese households, to help Chinese consumers unlock the savings and basically spend more on services and on products. So as a conclusion, I would say that the Chinese authorities' strategy to enhance innovation and support higher valued added industries is definitely interesting and is definitely a good strategy, but more needs to be done on the consumer side. And in any case, it will be difficult or maybe even impossible in our view to avoid a downwards trend in the long-term growth of the Chinese economy.
Okay, thank you very much, Françoise.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find the full report we just spoke about on our website. We'll leave a link in the show notes. If you'd like to discover more of our research, you can also follow the Ludonomics newsletter on LinkedIn. We'll leave a link down below for that too. If you like the podcast, please send it to any of your friends who might like it too, and leave us a rating and a review. We'd love to hear your feedback. In the meantime, stay tuned for the next episode.